I'm Jim O'Neill, a developer evangelist in the Northeast District, and this is the first of three screencasts devoted to talking about what Windows 7 has to offer from a developer's perspective. These screencasts are adapted from a presentation I gave during multiple stops of our June 2009 Northeast Roadshow. And in this first session, I'll talk about what tools and techniques are out there to help you assess the impact of adopting Windows 7, as well as how to adapt your existing applications, if necessary, to run well on the new operating system. Application compatibility is about assessing the impact of running Windows 7 in your home or office. There are really two aspects to it. The first is, how well do applications you run to do your job behave on Windows 7? These may be third-party applications like CRMs or commonly used applications like Word and Excel. Second, how well do the apps that you are building work on Windows 7? Whether you're an ISV or building applications for internal consumption, it's up to you to make sure your applications work well on the new operating system. The good news is that Windows 7 is actually built on top of Windows Vista, specifically having its genesis from the SP1 release of Vista. Now, with all of the negative press about Vista, calling this good news may not seem logical. The Vista of today, though, is not the same as the original release, and many of the pain points of the initial adoption of Vista have faded into the sunset. There were really two major issues with Vista that led to its tarnished image. First was compatibility. With the revamped driver model, it became painfully clear that the ecosystem just did not have the time to adapt, and we experienced blue screens and malfunctions with a vast variety of peripherals, graphics cards, and other components. Also new was the user account control, UAC, the guardian enforcing administrative access on machine resources like the registry and file system. In this case, it was our own applications that weren't ready. In XP and prior, the delineation between a standard user and an administrative user was ill-defined, and Vista drew a definitive line in the sand. Unfortunately, our applications that did things like write to the local machine hive of the registry now stopped working or prompted the user every 10 seconds for permission to do something. Through registry and file virtualization, as well as the developer population being aware of the need to write apps for standard user access, there's been a significant decrease in the occurrence of UAC prompts. So while there were some pain points with Vista in the early days, that's not really the case now, and that's why I maintain it's a good thing that Windows 7 is building off the same driver model and other lessons learned with Vista, versus blazing a new trail and potentially introducing a new set of issues. On top of this foundation, Microsoft is offering several versions of Windows 7 to address two segments of the audience. For the consumer, there are three versions available. Starter is a scaled-down version that will be pre-installed by OEMs on lighter-weight machines, like netbooks. Home Basic is a consumer version that will be available only in emerging markets, so we won't see it here in the States. Home Premium is the version most consumers will end up with. One thing to note, too, is that with Windows 7, each version is a proper subset of the next higher version. For instance, everything available in Starter will be available in Home Basic, and everything in Home Basic is available in Home Premium. For the business user, the primary version will be Professional, which actually straddles the consumer space a bit, since many people these days do some work from home and prefer having a machine with the same capabilities as the one at the office. At the top of the version hierarchy is Enterprise, which is available only via enterprise agreements with Microsoft and includes enhanced security features like BitLocker. For consumers that want all the bells and whistles in Enterprise, they can purchase Ultimate, which has the same feature set but different licensing. Once you've decided on the version of Windows 7, you'll want to turn your attention to how well the applications you use and develop will work on Windows 7. One of the first resources to consult is the Application Quality Cookbook, an 85-page document detailing changes between Vista and Windows 7. There's an analogous document covering XP to Vista as well, for those of you who are making the leap over Vista. This document has three primary sections. The compatibility section details features that have changed since Vista. These are things like the version number, which by the way is 6.1, not 7. It may seem counterintuitive, but actually helps application compatibility. Consider an application working well on Vista that checks for the OS version to determine if it can run. Since it's looking for Vista, it would check a version of 6, and if Windows 7 were actually version 7, the application might not even start. With a version of 6.1, it's likely that the application will continue and work as well on Windows 7 as it does on Vista. Just as an aside, though, version checking like this isn't really recommended, but it's quite common. Instead of checking version numbers, you should check for the feature availability directly, by detecting if an API or COM interface exists, for instance. Also changed in Windows 7 is the IE version. We've moved to IE8, so there may be issues with web applications that you use or develop. A nice thing about IE8 is that it includes the IE7 rendering engine as well, and it has a compatibility mode feature which allows you to embed a tag in your HTML to direct the browser to use IE7 mode. Likewise, as a browser user, you can force the browser to render a site in IE7 mode, which you might do if the site you're visiting isn't rendering correctly in IE8. By default, intranet sites will render in compatibility mode, again to enable as smooth a transition to Windows 7 as possible. From a business developer's perspective, there's not a lot of features removed from Windows 7, but these four guys, Petey, Merlin, Genie, and Robbie, the Microsoft agent guys, are gone. My guess, though, is that they didn't wind up front and center in your production applications. The second section of the cookbook talks about the new features, like taskbar changes, sensor API, and multi-touch support. We'll be looking at some of those features in other screencasts. The final section offers best practices, including how to deal with memory hangs and faults, and how to achieve logo certification, which, by the way, is actually easier now than it was with Vista. This section also points you to the Application Compatibility Toolkit, which is a set of utilities to empirically assess the impact of Windows 7 in your enterprise. The toolkit is a download available from Microsoft. The incredibly user-unfriendly URL is at the bottom of the slide, but you might save time just binging it. There are a number of goodies bundled up in that toolkit, and the first of those is the Application Compatibility Manager. This tool enables you to deploy a set of evaluators to candidate machines in your enterprise. Users go about their normal work on whatever operating system they are running now, and the evaluators detect application activities that may impact how well the application will run on Windows 7. Things like standard user access, or use of the deprecated GINA, Graphical Identification and Authorization DLLs. This information is collected and can be stored in a SQL Server database so that IT management can assess the impact of Windows 7 and come up with the best plan for deploying it. The Standard User Analyzer evaluates how well your own application will behave when run by a user without administrative privileges. The tool will detect access to restricted resources and log them so you can make whatever modifications are necessary in your application to address them. Standard User Analyzer can also suggest how to fix your application and apply shims, essentially small bits of code that transparently redirect the explicit operation to something similar that the operating system handles for you, without you changing your original code. The Setup Analysis tool is helpful to detect incompatibilities during setup routines, such as the installation of kernel mode drivers or access of files or registry keys subject to Windows resource protection. The IE Compatibility Test tool focuses on identifying when web applications involve items like ActiveX access, MIME handling, and attempts to write to the registry and file system. Lastly, the Compatibility Administrator enables you to build prepackaged app fixes, or shims, for an inventory of applications that have shared their compatibility information with Microsoft. You can also assemble your own fixes, pulling in the necessary shims for deployment to your users. One thing to note here is that all of these tools focus on 32-bit applications and aren't supported on 64-bit machines, although the tools generally run fine. At this stage in the technology curve, it's thought that most of the applications out there that are susceptible to application compatibility issues will indeed be 32-bit applications. In the future, we may see more 64-bit support in the toolkit. Another tool that you might happen upon is LUA Bug Light. LUA stands for Limited User Account, and as a term is somewhat of a precursor to the UAC, User Account Control. The tool's intent is similar to the standard user analyzer, however its implementation is quite different, and it can actually detect more issues than standard user analyzer. It can't mitigate them via shims though, and it's not officially supported, however there are a number of resources available to assist you with its use. The Vista Compatibility Center, soon to be renamed the Windows 7 Compatibility Center, is more of a consumer-focused site for accessing driver updates for devices like printers, cameras, and so on. Since developers are consumers too, this is a site you might want to take advantage of as well. Windows 7 provides a nifty tool called the Problem Steps Recorder. Its premise is simple, but audiences I've shown it to have given it rave reviews. Suppose you get a call from your father-in-law and he's complaining that his browser doesn't open to his normal homepage, perhaps the weather for his town, but rather to some obscure search site. While you might try to talk him through it on the phone, here's another way. Here's IE set up something like what I suspect my father-in-law is experiencing. Since he wants to view the weather as his homepage, let's first verify the URL that he needs to use. I suspect it's something along these lines. That's just what we need. Let me set it back to his home page. Next, what I'm going to do is run the Problem Steps Recorder, which is really just a screen capture tool, and walk through the steps required to change the home page. Notice too that I can add a comment here. When I stop recording, I'm prompted to save the information in a file. If you open the zip file, what you'll find inside is an MHT, or a compressed website. I can send this MHT file directly to my father-in-law, and he can actually run the steps I walk through as a slideshow so he can fix his issue. Now, I'm not sure the problem steps recorder was really designed for family tech support, but it hits the spot. Think, though, of how much time you'll save with users of your own applications by having them use this tool to report bugs to you. Rather than them telling you what they did and perhaps leaving out key steps, you've got everything you need in one file. Another feature you may want to leverage within your own applications is the troubleshooting platform. In Windows 7, all alerts are sent to the Action Center, and from there you can see pending messages as well as launch into the troubleshooting section of the control panel. Let's take a look. When I open the Action Center, I have access to a number of troubleshooting wizards that help identify common configuration issues and try to fix them automatically, scenarios like printers not working or failed network connections. Your applications can take advantage of this infrastructure as well, and you can add your own troubleshooting packs to this screen. To do so, you'd build PowerShell scripts that diagnose problems, assess the user's configuration, and then apply the requisite modifications. If you notice some common configuration issues among users of your applications, or perhaps compatibility issues with other applications, making a troubleshooting package available online for them can save a lot of calls to support. The final item I'd like to cover is XP mode. XP mode is essentially a virtual PC image of Windows XP Service Pack 3 that you can download onto Windows 7 Professional or above at no charge. The VPC image integrates into Windows 7 to provide seamless access to applications that are actually installed on the Windows XP image. Via the remote desktop protocol, applications installed in the XP VPC can be surfaced to Windows 7 as shortcuts and can access the clipboard in My Documents folder of the host operating system. Let's take a quick look here. I've already installed XP mode in Virtual PC. In my Windows 7 Start menu, I have access to a shortcut for Internet Explorer. When I select it, up comes Internet Explorer, but it's Internet Explorer 6. And I can even bring up Internet Explorer 8 right next to it. Two versions of IE running on the same machine? That's not possible, right? Well, IE 6 is actually running in the context of the XP virtual machine, but it's providing a desktop experience, just as if it were running on Windows 7. This capability provides one more option to minimize impact to users moving to Windows 7. If one of your core applications simply doesn't run on Windows 7, or you just don't have the time yet to update it, you can deploy the XP mode image and let users run just that one application in XP mode and still get all the benefits of Windows 7 for the rest of their tasks. I have a couple of caveats to note as well. First, installation of XP mode requires that your CPU support hardware virtualization. Not all do, and it's not a matter of CPU age. Some new CPUs don't support it, and some older ones do. Intel has a utility to determine if your CPU does support it, in which case you'll need to turn on the virtualization via a BIOS setting. Another thing to mention is that XP mode is great for smaller businesses or personal use, but it's not meant to compete with some of the enterprise virtualization offerings of Microsoft, like MedV. If you're running a large enterprise with hundreds of users, XP mode is not the recommended solution. That pretty much covers the application compatibility story for Windows 7. As I mentioned, this is part one of a three-part series, so I hope you'll join me for other sessions on developer productivity and how to leverage Windows 7 features to light up your existing or new applications. Thanks and have a great day.